Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week I'm here with Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Not too bad. Looking forward to seeing if we get a bit more rain, even though we've had some and it seems to have gone away again. You know, good old British weather.
It will rain next weekend. Bank holiday.
Is that what it's planned to? Oh, yeah, of course. Bank holiday. Of course it will. Yeah, absolutely. This week we have a guest with us and we have Shirish Patak from Talon Storage. Hi, Shirish.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
So our topic this week is to talk about unstructured data, and obviously that's something that your company focuses on. Why don't you just give us a 30-second elevator pitch about who you are and what the company does?
Absolutely. So Talon Storage is in the distributed storage business. So you don't come to us to store your data, but if you have remote sites, if you're remote users and you're trying to consolidate the data into one place, a data center or the cloud, you come to us so that you get access at all those remote locations. So we provide the software, the bridge, that allows these remote users to interact with the data as if it's local to them. And that's basically what we do.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. So we're here to talk about unstructured data because we see lots of talk about unstructured data at the edge, data in the data center, and the fact that there's huge amounts of growth. It seems that as we go forward, there's going to be a big issue managing large volumes of data, but it's going to get worse because we're less focused on having it in the enterprise. So probably a good start would be to perhaps, if you can, Shirish, just give us a definition of what you think unstructured means, because from my perspective, I would think it was object and file, but I guess, you know, the definition is probably a bit more complex than that.
Yeah. So, you know, as a storage vendor, and that's the side I have been on all my years in the business, we have a slightly more expansive view of what normally someone like Martin may consider is unstructured data. So an end user or an IT director's perspective of unstructured data is kind of clear. If the data has a model associated with it, or it's created with some kind of fixed structure or layout, well, that you have structured data. If it doesn't have that, it's unstructured. So it's much simpler. Unfortunately, storage vendors don't get to pick that. We can't say, hey, you can only store this kind of file or that kind of object. So we have to have a much more expansive view of what is unstructured. So the way I would define it is, if your application is interacting with data that you have stored on my platform with standard APIs, and it's not relying on any kind of ordering within the file or across files, and it's just plain simple access patterns, I would call that unstructured data. And as a result, we could include things that normally would be considered structured in unstructured. So things like PST files or VHDs, which are clearly structured, but to us, since you don't do anything special while accessing or manipulating them, guess what? They are unstructured.
So from your perspective, Martin, I would say that you deal with a lot of unstructured data, but actually quite a lot of the content is in one way or another structured, because media is sort of structured, but it's not structured like a database, obviously.
Yeah, pretty much all of it has some form of structure. So even a video file will have a header, there will be a body. So yeah, they're structured there. Obviously documents have structures, so we still have documents, pictures. JPEGs have a structure, there's inevitably a header file. And then database, we have quite a lot of databases, so they definitely are structured. Sometimes I wonder if the unstructured data tag doesn't necessarily make an awful lot of sense, because there's so many different types of data these days. From log structured data, including the name, it's log structured, but many people treat that as an unstructured data. So everything has structure, and also everything could be qualified as unstructured if you so wish.
So we have a definition that allows us to encompass whatever we want to decide to classify as unstructured, which is quite nice. It means we can manage our data in any form we want.
Best sort of definition, Chris, can be anything.
Yeah, one you can make up as you go along.
Well, I mean, interestingly, just to, you know, add to that point, even if you had a database file and you were just backing it up, at that point, it looks like unstructured data. If you're just taking a flat file and you're trying to back up, so it depends on how you interact with it. And I think that was my key point here, that interaction is important, how you interact.
Yeah, and that's a fair definition. I appreciate that. So let's go into a bit more detail and then start thinking about where all this data is coming from. So if I just set the scene slightly and say that we see every year that vendors produce reports that show us that the volume of data in the industry is going up significantly, and unstructured tends to be the one that's producing more than anything, then we're used to the idea that the volumes of data are growing. I guess what we're seeing more of is less of that data being generated in the data center and more of it coming from outside sources. Would you agree with that, Shirish?
Absolutely. And it's very much driven by how easy it is for an end user to create data these days, whether it's through their cell phones, their laptops, just their smart watches. It's so easy to create and it's so cheap to create data. So you're absolutely correct.
And in terms of growth numbers, I don't know whether I've got any numbers other than to say that I've seen it growing exponentially. I don't know whether you track anything within the industry to say what you think it looks like.
You know, that's a question I always avoid. But because, you know, everyone's opinion is different. What is structured? What is not structured? But I would say we know, at least colloquially from our customer base, it's minimum 20% year over year increase. So we know that. We see it. We see how much the data sets are increasing. Very likely we are underestimating it by quite a bit. But I can definitely say that's the lower bound.
Martin, do you have any numbers about what you see in the industry personally?
No, but we have some interesting rules of thumb. We just reckon that 80% of any storage we provision will be full within 6 months.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so our general feeling is actually it doesn't necessarily matter how much we give. So to be honest, we're almost at the stage of thinking actually we might give a bit less because you're going to fill it.
That's a huge growth. I would say that in a lot of the analysis I've done, and this is a really wide number, I've seen, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70%, even higher depending on the type of the industry and the company. Some companies generating a huge amount more than others, but without a doubt, huge amounts of data being generated. And of course, a lot of this is coming from automated sources now, Shirish, isn't it?
Absolutely. So that's, I think, the increase in automation. And in fact, the automation may not even be where you think it is. Your phone could be just generating data while it's sitting in your pocket. So there's just, as I said, ease, but also these background things that are creating data matter. So whether it's sensor devices, for example, IoT, that's another area where automated data is there.
Yeah, and that's really interesting to think that you forget that there are devices that are doing this even just by sitting there effectively passively, they're generating data. So people are creating and collecting data from, I guess, many sources, but not all of that data is moving into the core as we know, because we know that's going to be very hard to do. So a lot of it's going to stay distributed, I guess.
Well, I would not necessarily agree with that, because if you look at your phone, for example, a lot of that data is ending up in the cloud somewhere. It's not necessarily one cloud. It could be a Dropbox cloud. It could be your vendor's cloud, but it is ending up in the cloud. So centralization may be more, it may be there pervasively without you even knowing about it. So I may slightly disagree with that.
Okay, fair enough. I would say that we've had guests on who've talked about processing data at the edge, and they would say that data does sit on the edge to a certain degree. But maybe the difference is that there's processing going on at the edge and some of that data then comes back into core, I think. I think that's what we said, Martin, didn't we, when we talked to Scott, for example?
Yeah, I think it happens. I also think that we also see a lot of data getting processed at the edge to give user value immediately, but the raw data itself also ends up back. It may drip feed back, but it often will end up back. We're not very good at data curation in any industry. I would argue we probably keep far too much data because we don't actually have a good way of identifying which data is useful and which data is not.
Yeah, and I would add to that, by the way, that's exactly what some of the vendors like Talon are in the business of. We separate out the data access, which is really happening at the edge. So you cannot take the data access away from the edge. The phone is near you. You have to provide data there. Whereas the data management and the storage is happening at a central site. So what we are seeing is the split, that processing may be happening at the edge, but management and storage is happening at the core. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So why don't we go down into that level now and start thinking about what those challenges are and how it translates to, for example, the management. If we have got so much data spread around, whether it's in the data center or it's at the edge or whether it's even in the cloud, what are the major challenges that people are having to deal with?
You know, the obvious one is security, because if you look at this data, it's distributed, it's all over the place. And especially if it's enterprise data and it's maybe sitting in a Dropbox folder on your phone, well, you have a problem. Right? So the security and how to lock it down is, I think, one of the key challenges. We do have some, I would say, performance challenges, but as I said, processing on the edge is so pervasive that I think most applications, most device types handle that challenge pretty well. They just say, you know what, we'll do a lot of work on your device, whether it's your laptop, your computer, it's your smartphone, but we'll actually just do the management. We'll be dumb at the core, but smarter at the edge. So the performance thing is there, but it's not as important, I would say. So I would really focus on security, as I think is the biggest challenge here.
Okay, let's talk about the security angle a little bit, because I would say from my perspective, the one thing that when you're looking at implementing security in general, you need some sort of centralized or some sort of way of defining what the rules of access are. But that, and that's quite easy in the data center, because if you've got systems that are all based on the same sort of platform, then you can lock things into an Active Directory, for example. Right. But as soon as you start getting out to the edge and you start looking at devices that aren't running on a standard format, aren't running on a standard platform, could be mobile, could be using data within an application, applying those sort of same credentials, I guess, becomes much more tricky.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the biggest challenges, as I said. And it's really pervasive. In fact, this is one of the biggest concerns we see is that, hey, how do I protect one of my users? You know, it's not even that they're being malicious, but their laptop got stolen. Now what do you do? So you're exactly right, Chris.
And what about aligning that with audit? Because I would have said security and audit and the ability to actually see what's going on, they probably go hand in hand. They're probably very closely coupled. Because if you haven't got the ability to audit things, you couldn't, for instance, know when there was a security breach. And having audit allows you to show whether you're compliant and so on.
You're absolutely correct. And I think the ugly or dirty secret here is, I think in many cases, people just give up on that. You know, they're like, okay, I'm not going to be really able to tell what you're doing on your smartphone, or I'm not going to be able to tell what you really did on your laptop unless it's a work laptop. And so guess what? I'm going to put the controls elsewhere. I'm going to restrict the access up front. And that's really typically how people handle it.
Audit is, as Suresh says, is a bit of a dirty secret. We're not generally, it's very hard to do. I think in future, we'll see more audit driven out of AI and ML more than anything, try identify unusual access patterns and see when people are starting to access things which they shouldn't be. And then you'll see shutdown access happening at that layer, because we're now talking about so much data, so many files, it's next to impossible to audit access.
Exactly.
So we just have to give up on that then, do we?
No, I don't think we give up. I think technology will come to our aid. And I think we will see ML, machine learning, AI, and other things to actually highlight what's going on, to identify unusual behavior or behavior you think is wrong. So we may set some very high level rules, but I don't see, to a certain extent, the granularity being managed by humans.
Right. So that's an interesting point. And I think, I don't know whether you see that in your business, Suresh, but I think Martin's made a really interesting point there that in some respects sort of correlates with what we've seen in previous other bits of the storage industry, where we moved away from the ability to manage every single bit and byte or hard drive or system. And we went to a policy-based system where we said, here's what we want to do, but let the system take away and do a lot of, say, the performance management or load balancing or whatever it happens to be. Sounds to me like that's the direction we're going to have to go through with data, and the way Martin's saying it. Is that what you're seeing in your business?
Yes, and in fact, one of the drivers for many people to consolidate is exactly this, right? So they want their data in one place, in a data center, or in the cloud, exactly for this reason. You can control it there. And if you have the right controls, hopefully, well, you know, you can limit the damage that could happen if there is a rogue user. So that's really one of the big drivers for this centralization, consolidation, even cloud. A lot of it comes from the desire and management of data. Of course, security is one of them. There's the backup aspect. There is the long-term retention. So all of this is so much easier if it's in one place. Okay, so that's really a key driver, I would say, of this centralization of cloud, of all this that you're seeing today.
Okay, so what are the challenges that are out there? I'll pick one that I think would be concerning to me, but you can tell me whether you think that, you know, this is a concern or not, and then maybe you can sort of fill in some more gaps. But I would think that as soon as I start distributing my data, I now have an issue of the only word I can think to use is concurrency, or having the data consistent in the sense that if it's a version of that particular data, that it is a set of data that was created on that date. And if I move it and copy it somewhere else, I don't end up with multiple copies that have been slightly modified or slightly different. You know, that single record of every single piece of data. I would imagine that must be a problem that people have to deal with.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the biggest issues with distributed data. You have multiple copies of the same file, as you said, slightly different, maybe minor edits here or there. And then somebody has to sit down and bring them all together, or you just give up on it and you say, okay, I'll just live with the fact that they're going to be differing. And this causes problems. I mean, you could have legal documents that are slightly out of sync. You could have pricing sheets that are slightly different. So this can have real business impact if your data is not consistent, it does not have the one true copy perspective.
So Martin, I guess that must be quite an issue for you in your business when you look at media, because you can't afford to have the media not looking exactly the same all the time.
It is an issue, and if anybody has a really good solution to it, we'd be interested to know, because I don't think there is a really good solution to it. Certainly in the media business, editors who are working on the same video file, they'll take local copies and they'll change it. So managing those contentions and concurrency access, yeah, it's a major problem. I know people have said, well, what you need is something like Git. Well, that's not going to work if you've got a bunch of creative editors. They're just not that structured in the way they access things. So it's a problem. I don't think it's a solved problem. It exists.
So this is still something the industry has not really got their head around, the idea that when you create a piece of content, you want that content to be effectively controllable, in the sense that when it is modified, it's only modified in one place at one time. It sounds to me like that's still a bit of a gap. Shirish, what would you do for customers who are trying to solve that sort of problem in terms of your architecture?
So I was going to slightly disagree with you. There are certain use cases like media files, some kind of databases, where this is indeed a problem. But in fact, there's a whole industry out there that exists to make sure that this problem does not happen. And in fact, the trick is not that difficult. If you centralize all your Edge data into one location, well, you have one true copy that you're going to access. The problem is, how do you do it with high enough performance? And that's where these Edge solutions, which allow you to access this data that's sitting remotely, come into play. Whether it's a caching solution, whether it's replication, the real key here is to make sure that it remains consistent. So whatever you're doing on your Edge copy is being accurately reflected on that central site and any other sites that may be accessing it. So I would say for many data types, this is actually at least a partially solved problem. It's not fully solved, I'll agree with that, but it's definitely partially solved. And there are quite a few vendors who specialize in doing this for you.
Obviously, I can't disagree with you, because obviously this is your industry, and I'm not necessarily aware of some of those products. I have seen some of the cloud type solutions that can allow that to happen. So I know that there are some solutions that'll try and make your data available everywhere, and it'll do distributed locking. But I'm not sure whether that, as you said, whether that would give the performance that would actually make it practical to access content in multiple places at the same time with the right level of performance that you need.
So you always have a bit of a performance penalty. I'm not going to tell you that, oh, it's all as if it's local. There is a bit of a performance penalty, but actually you'll find that for many kinds of data, many data types, it's actually quite usable. I mean, we have seen people with shared Excel workbooks across the world, and that's one kind of shared data. Not quite a media file, but still it's shared data that's being accessed simultaneously or manipulated simultaneously. So I would say, yes, it does exist. There are quite a few vendors. Talon is, of course, one of them. But this is at least a partially solved problem.
I'm going to add a little bit to the end of that as well, because I think there's another issue there. And yes, it might be possible technically to access things in different places at the at the same time and manage some of that consistency, but you still have stupid users out there who will do something like create a copy of something, change the name, and then start editing their copy or their version of it and stick their initials at the end of a file. And suddenly you've got what you thought was the master is now a slightly modified, slightly different named version, yet 99.9% of the content is the same. And I think you have that as a problem, and that I think is a huge issue, and that might be in some respects, Martin, what you're referring to by the idea of having people editing content.
Yeah, we do. And so obviously people take multiple copies. You also get situations where a distributed office becomes disconnected. So changes which are being made at a distributed offices don't necessarily get reflected straight back to the core. Now, it's probably fairly unusual to have this happen, that two or three users are editing the same file. But if it does happen, then managing that contention at a later date can be hard to work out how you're going to consolidate to make sure the right change. Certainly if you had a financial document where you're changing pricing, you want to make sure you get the right price. Now, often people say, oh, the last edit wins. But if an edit's not being reflected consistently around an organization, you can't really do that. So it will probably need a human, or it will need some kind of visual inspection to actually be the tiebreaker to actually say, yep, that's the right one.
Shirish, I'm going to come back to you and ask you a question in a second relating to this, but it strikes me that in some respects, and I'm going to go on and talk about ILM in a second, but it strikes me in some respects that we need something that is a different way of thinking in terms of like a file system, where rather than allowing people to copy a file and create a completely new copy, that somehow we keep links from an original piece of content that's created so that any other copy that's taken from it is somehow linked back to the original. And the reason I say that in terms of talking about ILM is because surely we must now, we still need to go back and fix the ILM problem, where a piece of content is created and then things happen to it through its lifetime. And if we could somehow keep track of all of the related pieces of content that have spun off a master copy so that that relationship always exists, that might make the issue that Martin's just described a bit easier to deal with.
We already do this in media to a certain extent. Often you will work off a master copy and you don't actually ever change it. So you have an edit and it will just be tagged around time, or the changes are always in that. So the master never gets changed. It's only right. When you want to broadcast it, we run what's called a conform, which flattens it. So those changes are then reflected onto a copy of it, which then gets played out. In theory, that copy might get deleted or stored on separately. So we do have that within media, so that ability to track changes, so we know what's happened, and individual editors will have their own versions, but in theory you should never edit the master copy.
So what about ILM, Sherish? How are we going with that as an industry standard? Are we seeing that getting any better than it used to be?
I think it is. And in fact, as I said, all of these vendors who are in this business of centralizing and consolidating, this is one of the things, we enable, which is you can create your policies, you can manage the life cycle. And unfortunately, ILM is not one thing. Media, as Martin says, has its own way of doing things. If you are in, construction or manufacturing, you have a different way of doing things. If you're a software house, you have a different way of doing things. But if you can allow the administrator, the IT director, the CIO to manage the data in one place, and then create policies around how you're going to control the life cycle, absolutely, that's one of the things we do. But again, I'll come back to that one thing you said, that a user who decides to copy and do his or her own thing is always going to be a problem. I don't have an easy way around that. So, and that's one of the issues we deal with all the time. So I completely relate to that.
Okay. I just want to touch on something you just said there, which I think is quite an interesting angle. And that's that whole thing with ILM. And the piece that just occurred to me when you said it that I hadn't really thought about before is that perhaps in the past, we've thought about ILM as a technology that's being done at the platform or the hardware level for storage. But in actual fact, what we possibly have is we have a set of requirements where we need to have an application specific or an industry specific way of dealing with data through its lifetime. So we should have more application focused ILM.
Absolutely. And that's really, I think it's extremely hard, if not impossible, to define one ILM policy for every data type. Applications are different. How users use them are different. Media is very different from office files, which are very different from, say, a CAD CAM drawing. So, each one of them has their own requirements. And, some industries like the construction industry definitely have their own set of requirements around, and sometimes they are legally driven. It's not even just policy, it's law may require you to do things a certain way. So you're absolutely correct, Chris.
Okay, let's move on and talk about the cloud. And I think when we say cloud, we probably mean in this instance, public cloud. Mm-hmm. How are we seeing the cloud allowing people to solve this problem? The most obvious thing is that people could be just pushing it all into a central repository, but is it really that simple?
So the answer is, of course, it's not that simple. And let me actually take a step back. So when I look at the cloud, I look at it as something that is being used for cost and convenience, right? So one, the hope is that when you put stuff in the cloud, it's going to be much less costly. You don't have to pay for the raw storage. You don't have to pay for backups. Hopefully you can eliminate a headcount in some cases. But that's what drives the cost down. And that's the hope, that when you put stuff in the cloud, hey, it's going to be cheaper. The other is obviously convenience. And when I say convenience, I don't need to hire a person. I don't need to be, setting aside floor space. If I wanted to get 2 more terabytes of data, it's easy. Just, buy it from S3 or Azure, as the case may be. So the convenience factor and the cost factor are what really drive the data. And to me, the cloud is just like let's call it the next generation outsourced data center, right? That's really what it is. You're outsourcing your business headaches to the cloud provider. Let them manage the backups. Let them handle snapshotting. Let them provide the raw storage. And that's really the power of the cloud, is you get, and in doing so, of course, those guys can give you economies of scale, which, hopefully will translate down to you, both in terms of the operational efficiencies as well as in terms of the OPEX, the cost efficiencies. So that's how I look at the cloud. And so to me, anything you would normally do in a data center traditionally, consolidate, centralize, buy your big NetApps, EMC filers, what have you. Today you can do in the cloud, and that's great.
Do we think the cloud gives any specific advantages, though, compared to you running it in your own data center? Now, I would say, for example, One obvious scenario would be that the cloud provider can probably present your data more locally to you than you could in your own data centers because of the distributed nature of the way that they build their architectures. But is there anything specific that being cloud-based is giving you that you couldn't just do by centralizing in your own data center?
You know, it's a really good question, Chris, and it's something I have been asking our customers for a long time. Now, obviously, we come from a more file-centric background, so maybe we have a little bit of a blinders in that area. But my conclusion is there are certain things you can certainly do better in the cloud, right? Which is the distribution, as you said. You can have, believe it or not, in some ways better security because, you know, you're not worried about someone walking out with a hard disk. Okay, you can definitely do better management of your data sets. You don't have to do any provisioning anymore. But in terms of, can you create completely new paradigms or new, I'm not sure. Okay, and I would be honest, I don't probably know. There are probably people who study cloud storage and cloud in general who would probably be able to tell you, you know, there's this completely new way of doing things that we have discovered. Okay, so that I have not yet seen, at least from the people I'm interacting with in the storage world. Now, by the way, there are other worlds. Okay, storage is not the only thing. So, for example, for dev test or for testing and verification, it's a boon. I mean, you can do things that you could never do before. You can spin up the VMs, do the tests, run them down, do something else. It has completely transformed in that area.
Absolutely, but that's not quite the same. So from your perspective, Martin, I mean, it would seem like it's a positive thing to be able to use public cloud, but clearly life isn't that simple because moving data in and out is hard, especially if you've got very large pieces of content and you may have specialist equipment you want to access that particular content as well. So centralizing actually might not be a really positive thing at all.
Okay, so if I was designing a media company today, I'd run everything in the cloud.
Okay.
I don't have that capability. We have a huge amount of media, and as do most media companies. And if I was Netflix, Netflix has absolutely got the right way of doing it. I can think of no reason, really, to do anything in my data center. But it would mean rewriting everything and changing the way we did a whole load of stuff. That's fine. So where we are today, so there are some advantages, by even for data distribution, by going into the cloud. Certainly the big cloud providers have a much better interchange capabilities between the big internet providers. So you can reduce the number of hops, so your data can move around a lot quicker. So is that, I mean, so that definitely is an advantage for people. Getting stuff into the cloud, so then it can then be distributed much quicker and much more significantly easier, that's one of the things which we try and do. So I think public cloud eventually wins, unfortunately for everybody who's listening, but it will take some time. But if you were anybody who's running a startup today, if you think about building your own data center, unless you really are hyperscale, you're probably a little bit crazy.
Okay, so I'll summarize in some respects what you just said, or add something to that. And it sounds to me like it's not necessarily about whether you should go to the cloud. It's about how you structure your data management so that you can, in one way or another, take advantage of public cloud. That's a lot of what you're saying, I think. And by example to that, I mean things like looking at Snowball devices or Snowball Edge or any of those sort of things that can allow you to collect data and ship it in really easily, as well as just using a network.
And what if you can, basically, if you can minimize your data coming out of the cloud, that's a really good thing for your operation, certainly for your line of business operations. I mean, obviously, you have distribution in media. You want to get it, you have to get stuff out of the cloud to go to your consumers. But for editors, things like that, so you'd want to run all of that compute in the cloud and you'd want to front it with some kind of thin client device.
Right. As we sort of come towards the end of our discussion, I really just want to try and, in some respects, summarize what we've talked about, because we've sort of gone off and talked about a lot of the problems in the industry, Shirish, and some of the things that could be done. But really, in terms of actually managing unstructured data, can we say, for example, whether there are any standards, any best practices? You've obviously got a company which is doing a lot of this. How is it actually being addressed, and how are the problems for customers being solved?
So again, I will reiterate that I think one of the biggest things to getting the problem solved is this centralization and consolidation. And I do agree with Martin that the cloud is coming. It is probably today, running a data center is probably just not the way to go. Okay, so completely agree with that. So I think once you get to that, then it really becomes a matter of having very clear-cut best practices, whether it's in terms of ILM, whether it's in terms of backup and snapshots. I'll give you an example that we recently saw in our customer base where a customer put their data into the cloud and they said, hey, we won. We put it in the cloud. It's cheaper for us. We don't have to worry about it. Guess what? Someone went and deleted a whole bunch of files. Now, what happened is they had not put up snapshots. They had not put up backups in place. So guess what? All that data was gone and it had to be reconstructed. So it's not that you can just dump it in the cloud. You still need the best practices. You still need to think through your IT strategy of how you're going to manage it end to end. So it will be different for different industries. As I said, ILM is very application or industry specific, but it needs to be thought through upfront. And I just caution everyone who wants to just dump stuff in the cloud. No, think through it first. Think what it means. Think, does your application have to change now? Do I need to start writing to objects instead of files? Do I need to, since I'm no longer backing up, do I need to set up backup best practices or snapshots or replication, geo-replication? So those are the kinds of things that now people will have to start thinking about and are thinking about.
Okay, so really it's about having a good data management strategy. So we should still be having a proper understanding of where our data comes from, what we do with it, how it's secured, how we track it, how we store it, how we do all the things we've always done before, but we just have to think of it in context of the issues that we see today in the industry.
Absolutely, you're exactly correct, Chris.
So that was great. What a great conversation. I think we went off in lots of different directions, and I think it gives us some real thought for the future in terms of digging down into some of this in more detail. So from that perspective, Shirish, if anybody wants to find you online, stalk you, track what you do on Twitter or LinkedIn, where can they find you and where can they find the company?
So personally, I'm on LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out to me or connect with me. The company, primarily, we do have a Facebook account, Talent Storage. We have a Twitter feed, and we also have, of course, our website, http://talentstorage.com. So feel free to look us up, see how we do our own unique spin on the problems Chris is talking about. But that's where we are.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks for joining us. And hopefully we can catch up with you sometime in the future. So as usual, you can find us online at storageimpact.com, where we'll put obviously the show notes and the links that Shirish has just given us there. You can find us on Twitter, obviously, at storageimpact.com. You can find us in the LinkedIn group, and we have seen a few people join, which is great, because at least then we can start to generate some conversation. And obviously we'd be really pleased if you went onto iTunes and gave us a rating, because anything that helps us become more obvious on there would be great too. So Shirish, thanks for joining us, and catch up with you next time, guys.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.